My name is Victoria Ketty, and you are listening to WGXC, ACRA, 90.7 FM.
Here is what you can do to help during the COVID-19 outbreak locally. The American Red Cross is warning of a blood shortage. The organization says fear of spreading the coronavirus prompted the cancellation of blood drives around the country, bringing the blood supply to dangerously low levels. The organization is urging those who can to donate blood and have provided a list of the precautions the Red Cross is taking to keep donors healthy at redcrossblood.org. Right now, there is a critical shortage of type O blood. Anyone who can should go to redcrossblood.org to see about details about donating blood locally.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. NBC News reports that the U.S. Senate voted 96-0 for a bill meant to address a health crisis, but tailored more to the economic disaster. The $2 trillion bill includes billions of dollars in credit for struggling industries, an increase in unemployment insurance, and direct cash payments to Americans. The U.S. House will vote on the bill March 27th, and the president says he will sign it into law. Both New York senators voted for the measure. Chuck Schumer said that while the bill was, and I quote, far from perfect, end quote, it had, and I quote, improved significantly to warrant its quick consideration and passage, end quote. Kirsten Gillibrand tweeted, and I quote, the stimulus package we just passed is a good down payment in the fight against this outbreak. Those who need it most will have some help on the way. But make no mistake, there is much more to be done, and I'll keep working to deliver the resources our country needs to recover. End quote. You can read more about this story at the NBC News website. The Daily Freeman is reporting trout and salmon fishing season in New York begins Wednesday, April 1st. The State Department of Environmental Conservation is encouraging anglers to get outdoors, but to stay safe and continue to practice social distancing amid the COVID-19 pandemic. A full list of the planned trout stocking for 2.27 million catchable-sized brook, brown, and rainbow trout in 307 lakes and ponds and roughly 2,845 miles of streams across New York is available at dec.ny.gov. While enjoying the outdoors, anglers are directed to follow the guidelines for preventing the spread of colds, flu, and COVID-19, including avoiding busy waters and close contact with other people. Anglers are also encouraged to purchase their licenses online. Liana Lekasevic is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. In February, Coryman's middle school students, Parker DeYo, Louisa Englehart, Ryan Keeper, Alvia Ortiz, John Robinson, and Samuel Robinson were awarded first place in the first LEGO League robotic tournament at SUNY Polytechnic Institute of Nanoscale Science and Engineering. The teams are presented with a themed challenge each year. This year, and I quote, they had to identify a problem with a public building or space within their community, design a solution, and share their solution with others, end quote. Coleman's town supervisor George McHugh said when honoring the students at the February 27th town board meeting, and I quote, "The students also had to build and program a robot capable of completing various missions," end quote. For their project, the students chose to tackle the problem of noise pollution by presenting a solution that would reduce the noise generated by trains in their community. Read the full story in the Ravenna News Herald. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, and COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Graham. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for March 26, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. The Senate Wednesday evening rushed to pass a $2.2 trillion emergency relief package designed to flood the U.S. economy with money as households and businesses continue to reel from the coronavirus outbreak. But the Washington Post reports shortly after announcing the deal, Senate leaders struggled to fend off a number of last-minute snags. Among them, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo demanding changes to help his state deal with a flood of new virus cases. Four Republican senators said a provision in the bill needed to be fixed immediately, or it would incentivize people not to return to work. For his part, Trump said, "I will sign it immediately," as the Senate's lawmakers tried to set a time for a vote. Longtime advocates of paid family leave and sick days for all Colorado workers are hoping state lawmakers see the coronavirus pandemic as a wake-up call.
The vast majority of Coloradans don't have access to paid family or sick leave, making it hard for many workers to stay home if they or someone in their family has symptoms. Kathy White with the Colorado Fiscal Institute says the COVID-19 crisis shows how critical paid leave is for workers, the overall economy, and public health.
There are always going to be times when people need to take time off work for themselves, to care for a loved one, to deal with a serious medical illness, and now we're seeing even for a public health crisis.
Congress recently passed the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, which includes temporary paid leave provisions, but it excludes between 50 and 75% of private sector workers, including those who work for companies with 500 or more employees. Critics of paid family leave have argued that the costs could be too high for businesses operating on thin profit margins. I'm Eric Galatas.
A new fund launching to support immigrants facing COVID-19 in Massachusetts since they're ineligible for most state and federal assistance.
The Mass UndocuFund for COVID-19 Relief is trying to raise $1 million to support undocumented people struggling with the virus or the related economic hardship in the Bay State. According to Pew Research, Massachusetts has about 275,000 undocumented residents who don't qualify for unemployment benefits or other state and federal aid. Yesenia Prodero of Massachusetts Jobs with Justice says the need is great.
We're just trying to give a little bit of a safety net to people that don't have a safety net at all. A lot of people are cleaning offices and coming at night and you don't see them. It's just all the invisible work.
People can find more information or donate online at massundocufund.org. I'm Laura Rossbrow-Tellum reporting.
This is PNS. The COVID-19 virus has not only delayed the 2020 tax season, but also has put the brakes on a free tax prep assistance program for the nation's largest volunteer-based service.
The AARP Foundation's tax aid sites in Arkansas and other states are closed until further notice to help flatten the curve of the new coronavirus transmission. Arkansas Tax Aid Coordinator Deborah Brown explains that while it's a necessary step to protect the health of volunteers and clients, it's also going to affect the lives of many taxpayers.
It costs $100+ to go and get a simple tax return prepared, and there's many people across Arkansas and the country, quite frankly, that can't afford that. So it does have a financial impact in all of our communities.
Volunteers at Arkansas's 19 tax aid sites prepared more than 11,000 income tax returns last year. The filing deadline for 2019 federal returns was extended to July 15, 2020, and Brown says tax aid will continue to assess whether some or all sites could reopen. Mary Sherman reporting.
Taxpayers who have questions about filing and finding assistance can look online at the IRS website, irs.gov/freefile. And as Americans look for the latest factual information in the COVID-19 crisis, a new study shows it's getting harder to tell what's real and what isn't on social media platforms like Facebook and Twitter. The report co-author Christine Jing says a surprising number of people in the study could not spot the lies.
While they said they're very good at being skeptical and spotting fake news, we found that some of them did end up falling for some of the misinformation, which really goes to show that anyone can be susceptible for misinformation because it's just so hard to spot.
She says one way to avoid getting duped is to investigate the source, because many posts from so-called trusted second cousins or old high school friends do not originate from credible news sources. Finally, our Andrea Sears gives us a break from COVID-19 and tells us a conservation group say proposed changes to the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, would let potentially damaging projects avoid rigorous review and also public input.
For more than 50 years, NEPA has been the federal process that helps protect water, air, and wilderness areas from environmental damage. But according to Kirk Johnson, who heads the group Friends of Allegheny Wilderness, the proposed changes would make NEPA an environmental review process in name only.
Really, all that it would be doing would be rubber stamping, in effect, industry proposals for development on federal public lands.
The Federal Council on Environmental Quality says the changes would make reviews by federal agencies more efficient, effective, and timely.
Hoping you are keeping a safe distance, this is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather. Starting just below 30 today, temperatures climb high, reaching 58 by 5 p.m. Dress in layers if you go out. It will be warm this afternoon, but there will be a stiff wind. Overnight temperatures slide down to the upper 30s, with light rain showing up just before dawn tomorrow, lasting until 10 a.m. Tomorrow's high will be 60, occurring at 4 p.m. We're looking at a relatively warm but wet weekend. More details to come tomorrow. Pollen levels will be moderate today, dropping off to nothing tomorrow. The next high tides will be at 5:19 p.m. and tomorrow at 5:25 a.m. The next low tides will be at 11:36 a.m. and 11:42 p.m. Water temperature will be 41 degrees today. Sunset today will be at 6:55 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:47 a.m. Looking way up, we see another relatively quiet day in the solar system. No near-Earth objects or plasma streams are expected. Solar wind speed is currently 379 kilometers per second at 4.8 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2, quiet. There have been 16 days since the last sunspot, and this has been the better weather brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Valerie McCavany of Leeds, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Scout of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
If only it was so simple. Only
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena. I am a student of MC Smith, and I am also from Hudson.
Hi, I'm AJ. I go to school at Leibri, and I live in Elizaville.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Yay!
Books we love, books we hate.
Bookishly.
All that good stuff. And today is our first virtual meeting.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yay. I'm not sure whether or not I'm excited about it.
I've ever been to, actually. Well, like, it's the first meeting, but like, I've talked to my friends before.
It's just weird. We can all say that
it's just a bit new.
Yeah,
new and a little weird.
So how are you all feeling about what's going on in the world?
Meh. At least I get more time to talk with my family.
Yeah,
that's the good thing.
It's a bit weird to have to do schoolwork from home, but
yeah.
And also, but we also got a lot more time to read. I have a lot more free time.
Oh, yeah.
So do we all have any books that we've been reading over this sudden break from school?
Me.
You want to go first, AJ?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there's this book. It's Perfectly Normal. And it's about changing bodies, growing up, sex, and sexual health. Hmm. Not exactly a choice book, but... I just like reading about it. I will not show the pictures, don't worry.
It's just, those are one of those books that your parents have definitely forced you or tried to get you to read at some point. I've never read any of them that my parents have given me.
Well, you should start with this series because,
okay.
Well, there are some pictures, but it doesn't show every little solitary detail. Plus, it just gives you the overall, not, like, every detail.
Okay.
You want to have, like, these big books of it?
Yeah.
Are you learning some good stuff?
Sort of. Ish, maybe. Because some of that I read over and over and over and over, so I'm not exactly learning new stuff. Because I think I've read this book about 1, 2, 1,000, 2,000, 5 million, 10 million, 1 billion, 2 million.
I don't know if I have any of those kinds of books from when I was, like, small, but I don't know. I'd have to look pretty hard for them if I had any of them.
I had one growing up. I forget what it was called, but it was, all, you know, about puberty and sexuality and, like, talking about, like, where babies come from and, like, stuff like that. And it had these little cartoon images that were so funny that I just loved looking at the pictures when I was a kid.
The picture. Those pictures in those books are always hilarious.
Yeah, I have very vivid memories of all the pictures.
I'm reading a much more depressing book than that. I'm still reading The Tattooist of Auschwitz.
Okay.
It's still required reading. I've, like, slowed down reading it and, like, have looked into other books because I really have no idea when I'm supposed to finish it now, since everything has been thrown out of whack. But I'm still reading it. I'm about halfway through it, and it's pretty good. It is a biography written by Heather Morris about a Jew in Auschwitz named Lael, who gets the job of the tattooist who puts the numbers on the prisoners' wrists. And so it is a real story, and it's pretty depressing, but it's very well written.
Was the character before she had that role at Auschwitz, was she a tattooist before?
It's a male character. It pretty much tells the story straight from when he's loaded on the transport to when he shows up at Auschwitz. And very soon after that, he becomes the tattooist's assistant. And then that tattooist disappears and is most likely killed. So he becomes the head tattooist and gets his own assistant.
Well, not exactly one of my favorite ideas of careers, but...
Oh, yeah. No, not at all. But I'm only halfway through it. It's a true story, and it's depressing to read, but it's well written, so that, like, I don't know how to describe it. It's not a book you'd read for fun, but it's a book you'd read to, like, have an experience. Of course, now I get to take more breaks from that, which is nice, because I don't feel like being sad all the time. So I've started reading a book that I've actually read before. This book has such an interesting story behind it. There is a YouTuber named Mr. Creepypasta who does story narrations on YouTube a lot. And a couple years ago, he managed to get his own book published with a bunch of his favorite stories that he's narrated in that book from multiple different authors, online authors who write under, pen names and publish their work directly to the internet. And he made a printed book called The Creepypasta Collection, Modern Urban Legends You Can't Unread. I've got my dad to start reading it finally because I really wanted him to see some of them. And I've been reading a few of my favorite stories in it just for fun. But yeah, I believe he has a second book out, and I have it, but I have not yet read it, a second collection out. But that's what I'm reading in between sessions of The Tattooist of Auschwitz. I'm reading the Creepypasta collection.
Nice break from the serious material.
Yeah, I love horror, so yeah. For me, it definitely is a break. I know not everyone would like to immediately jump into horror, but I love it. And I have quite a few favorite stories from it.
What's your favorite story about?
Oh, my favorite story. I think my favorite story in the book is called The Horror from the Vault. It's written in a format of a bunch of emails and interviews between people, kind of like Dracula. And I love stories that are written in little segments like that. So you have to kind of piece together what's going on. So you got this story about a couple archaeologists who dig up a vault and a sarcophagus in the vault. So they take it back, they do testing on it, it doesn't match any metal in real life. And then it switches perspectives to a police interview where the police is talking about finding their lab in ruin, not finding any of the scientists alive. The sarcophagus is destroyed. Something's broken out of it, and it goes on from then to figure out what this thing is that's broken out of the sarcophagus and is now terrorizing this little town that they're in. So I love it because of the way it's written. I love it because of stuff that happens in it. I think it's legitimately creepy.
That's interesting.
I love it very much.
How about you, Lena? Have you been reading anything, or what have you been enjoying?
I haven't read anything because I've actually gotten myself into this new series. It's not even from Netflix or Hulu. It's from YouTube, and it's good.
What's it called?
My Inner Demons, made by Aphmau. It's one of those cringy series.
I know what she's talking about. A lot of YouTubers like to make their own little series of almost rom-coms or reality TV shows. And they're a lot of fun. I watch them sometimes when I draw or something.
Yeah.
I've been actually spending a lot of my time listening to YouTube narrations rather than actually really reading, because I have recently had to do artwork at home and then upload it for my college drawing class. So when I don't have time to read something myself, I will listen to a narration of a short story, usually once again horror, and I will draw while doing that, because obviously I can't read and draw at the same time. It's unfortunate, but my two favorite hobbies I cannot do at the same time for that ultimate favorite hobby. Yeah. So instead I listen to things. I have gotten into actually my own YouTube series as well. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm working on my next YouTube video.
Oh, yeah? You're making one?
I think I'm actually subscribed to your channel, but I can't remember if I am or not. I'll have to check later.
Yeah, but, like, it's going, like, my channel, when I look back at my videos, like, when I watch it, like, if I posted it, like, 1 second ago, I'm like, oh, God, this is cringy. This is good for my channel.
You're always your own, like, harshest critic. I know I don't like any of the videos that I posted or artwork that I posted on my YouTube channel. As for why it's always horror, it's because it's my favorite genre. It's always been my favorite genre of story. It's my favorite genre to write in creative writing.
Why do you choose horror against the others? Is this because that you like just, like, scaring yourself?
Because I've watched and read so much horror, I think it's more of, like, an obsession now to where I want to find something that will really scare me. There is one series that I've always gone back to, which is another internet story series, and usually it's the internet series nowadays rather than professionally made movies or published books that actually do manage to scare me, because while movies have a rating system and books have to appeal to publishers, something that someone publishes on the internet really has no filter and no censorship to the point where they can do whatever they want. So the one thing that I have, like, come back to over and over again and has never failed to scare me is a series called Cabin in the Woods, which is narrated by a YouTuber called Bebusta, which was originally published on Reddit, actually. It's a 7-part series. It's pretty long, but if you have nothing to do, you can probably blast through it real quick. It's about a man, it's narrated from a man's perspective, and his wife's family owns a cabin in the woods that they spend some nights at. And when they come back to their home, they find out that something may have followed them from the cabin, a spirit or something. So one, I'm usually not scared by paranormal stuff in that genre. I prefer, like, true crime or like body horror kind of things. But this is a paranormal horror story, and it actually manages to scare me, which is why I keep coming back to it. It has a good buildup. It actually concludes, which is something that you don't always get with something published on the internet, because unfortunately, if the author gets bored, it's very easy to just abandon their story, and then you never get a conclusion. But this one actually has a solid ending, and actually a couple false endings in there. So you're always engaged, you're always into it. It was very good, and I always listen to it when I can't find anything else to listen to.
Well, at least you have something to do over this break, because I know, like, a lot of people in the city who are in very, very, very small apartments.
Oh, yeah, people in the city can't go out at all.
And even if they do try and get it delivered to them, it's like, and even mom now, she has to leave the cardboard out for, like, 7 hours, and then she wears gloves and a mask, and then she scrubs it over.
Yeah,
and
a lot of people are becoming very scared.
And then she scrubs it again and again and again and again until I think that this cardboard's going to wear away, and then there's going to be nothing. And then she wears away the packages itself.
You got to be careful.
Once I was afraid that mom was going to scrub all the pages of my book that was going to be delivered, because I was like, water, paper, no go.
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about the stuff inside the packages, but you should at least, like, probably wash your hands after taking packages from outside, especially in New York City, where I think it's, like, pretty bad. I mean, everyone is together, obviously. Everyone, I think, in there can't really go anywhere because we live in, like, a small, like, kind of spread out neighborhood. Me and my mom can, like, take walks every so often, which is really nice, because mentally I think everyone needs to, like, actually get out every once in a while. Just be careful about it. But yeah, it must be really hard for people who live in, like, apartment buildings and, like, small areas. And it's probably really rough. I know the school is, like, giving out free meals still for people who rely on that, and that's nice that they do that for people. But yeah,
even though some people, like one of my friends from 6th grade in New York City, Mara, she has a garden in the back of her area, but then there's someone else has, like, a balcony right above it, I think, and a balcony below, so she still has to be really careful.
Yeah, you should wash anything that, like, comes out of your garden anyway. I was never able to get a garden to grow. It's never something I've succeeded at.
Well, I'm not the type for gardening, and besides, everyone in the city is going to Central Park because it's so big. But the problem is, almost the rest of New York City is thinking that, so they all go to one huge place. And
yeah.
And it is packed with people, so everyone's going to Central Park. I think it's safer to stay in your home than go to Central Park.
But yeah, the whole point of the social distancing thing is to stay indoors. But, yeah, it's rough sometimes. It's kind of like, it's hard to stay away from everyone. But you do get to read books when you stay away from everyone. So that's part of the fun, I guess.
And the reason why we're here.
Yeah. Does anyone else have any books to talk about? Oh my gosh. Love of my life. Yes.
Which one?
This
Bone. Week. Yeah, which number is it actually?
Crown of Thorns.
Is that the 10th one?
Which is the 9th book and
ninth one.
I only have the first one. I want to read all the rest, but I don't care if I skip around a bit. I just like looking at the pictures, not really the storyline as much.
Yeah.
I love the pictures and the storyline. But I've been reading it really slowly, and I've really been reading it occasionally, like maybe a couple books a year. And so I finally finished it. There are some other books in the Bone universe, but this is the end of the like main storyline. So I think there's another one that takes that's maybe I can't remember if it's a sequel or a prequel. And then there's like Bone Tale of the Spark or something like that.
I had no idea they had extra books.
Is there one where they are in Boneville?
I don't know.
Like a prequel? I don't think so. I had no idea there were even extra books. I had no idea.
For those listening who haven't heard of it before, it's the Bone series by Jeff Smith. And I would say it's geared towards middle grade or teenagers. And it's the story of some characters known as Bones. They're Bone characters. They're these little... you should just look up a picture of them, but they look like kind of like skeleton-y, but not skeletons. They're just like...
They look like comic strip characters, almost. Like what you'd see in a newspaper.
They're just like these white shapes that have faces and hands and things. And so there's three bones, Bone Bone, Phony Bone, and Smiley Bone, and they're cousins, and they've been kicked out of Boneville at the start of the series because Bone is always getting them into trouble. And so they are off, like, making their way outside of Boneville, and then they get separated. And that starts an adventure where our main character is Phone Bone, and he meets some human characters, and he meets some other animal characters in the forest, and some fantastical characters along the way. There's dragons and rat creatures.
There are dragons. There are dragons in this book. I remember that vividly.
I'm a big fan of the rat creatures, personally.
Oh, I love the rat creatures too.
I don't, they're not my favorite, but they're not my least favorite thing. But
they're so cute.
It. But not so cute. Also,
I just gave JJ a picture, if anyone's wondering.
But also, what was that cloak thing at the end of the first book? Like the cloak thing was talking to
the
Phony Bone?
But there's some.
I need to reread these because I don't actually remember the cloak thing.
Yeah, I don't remember for sure, but there is at least one cloaked character in the book that's a bit of a creepy villain character. It might be that one. But it's a fun mix of like sometimes it's really funny and silly, and then sometimes it's really intense and scary or dramatic at least. And I love the artwork. It's like this weird mix of cartoony and more realistic. And it's very fun. So. I finally finished it. And next up, my next graphic novel is going to be Ghosts because Lena's been suggesting it for a year. So I figured I should finally read it. Oh, I have something I can tell you all about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So with a lot of people being stuck at home, there's a lot of companies out there and organizations that are making things available for free for young people in particular, but also for adults. And Audible is one of those. So Audible is like a subscription audiobook series that you usually have to pay for. And they've started up a site called stories.audible.com. And it has a lot of free books that you can listen to that are geared towards kids and teens. And they even have some in other languages. So you can listen in Spanish, Italian, German.
Well, that might be good to help because my mom speaks Italian and it would just help me be able to understand like daily life words.
I have read about a lot of companies giving out like 30 days free or several days free for like people just to do in their house.
When you said Spanish, it actually kind of reminded me, I really want to learn like more about like Mexican stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And like I want to learn how to speak more Spanish because I'm not that good at speaking it.
Well, there's one thing that we all know about Spanish, how to say hello. That's like
everyone's pretty easiest. Much.
Yeah,
I would like to learn more Spanish, possibly. My dad's also trying to learn because it was his first language, but he kind of lost it after he got into school. My dad and his whole side of the family is Puerto Rican. If he had like kept it, I think he said that I would have probably been taught Spanish and English growing up. But yeah, Spanish is interesting because depending on what dialect you're talking in, like I've because I'm Puerto Rican, I grew up knowing that pasteles were these things like cooked in a plantain leaf and it's like mushy and it's good and it's yummy. But then I get to school where they teach you that the word pasteles means pastries or dessert. And I'm just like, no, that's not correct. What are you talking about? Yeah. That's the opposite of deliciousness wrapped in a plantain leaf. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Lena, have you thought about how you're going to practice your Spanish?
No, I don't want to go on Duolingo because it's like, oh, you're doing great. Okay, I don't care now.
Duolingo will bombard you with notifications, and I know a lot of people don't like it because of that.
Yeah, and also my friend keeps on bothering me. She's like, you're learning Spanish, right? So open Duolingo, and something bad will happen. Duolingo will get mad at you and probably try to hurt you, and I'm like,
that's like
no.
The joke. That's the joke that the Duolingo owl gets angry if you miss your lessons because it sends you so many notifications that's become like a kind of joke that like the owl will get you. I love it's so funny. So funny to me.
I actually don't have to worry about that much because any time that mom can, she talks to me in Italian. And it's actually kind of cool because I understand what she's saying most of the time. Like 64% of the time I understand without having to say, huh?
Yeah, that's like when you've grown up around it enough, you might not know how to speak it, but you can like pretty much understand it. My dad like works that way with Spanish too. He can understand Spanish if it's spoken to him. He just cannot speak it back to whoever's talking to him.
I took Spanish in high school, so I have some knowledge and some vocabulary that I've retained, but there's a couple things that I like to do to practice. Well, I guess three things I like to do to practice Spanish. One is when I'm with my Spanish-speaking friends, I like to try to speak with them in Spanish as much as possible. And then if I have trouble with a word, I just ask them, you know, como se dice blank, like whatever word it is. Like, how do I say this in Spanish? And then I also like to read bilingual books, especially children's books, because the, you know, it's short. So I don't have to read a full novel in a language that's not my primary language, which would be very difficult and take a long time. But there's some kids' picture books that have the English and the Spanish side by side. So you can read it in one language first and then see the other and kind of figure out how it's being translated.
I had a poetry book like that with the Spanish and English poetry. I think my dad brought it back from Puerto Rico one time.
I have that with Shakespeare too, except just English and Shakespeare.
Yeah, that's just English and English intense.
And then the other thing I like to do, which I don't do this often enough, but it's a fun thing to do, is just to like see if you can add subtitles in Spanish to something that you're watching. And then it doesn't even have to be in Spanish. It could be something in English, but then you just happen to see the words in Spanish underneath.
One of my first Spanish teacher ever had us watch Matilda with Spanish subtitles. And then my next Spanish teacher had us watch a Spanish soap opera, telenovela, without subtitles. And it was so dramatic. And it was like an episode from like the middle of the soap opera. So it was insane.
What's a soap opera?
A soap opera and a telenovela are basically the same thing. The telenovelas are just Spanish. A soap opera you can like tell something's a soap opera because all the audio sounds like this, and everyone can be like, all their S's are very, and it's just ridiculously dramatic for the sake of being ridiculously dramatic. There are like, there are affairs, there are marriages, and there are divorces, and there are, and everything is intense and insane and over dramatic and overacted, and it's incredibly entertaining for some reason. And there's like really dramatic music playing in the background all the time, and usually the footage is really grainy and weird. And that's what I know about soap operas, at least from watching them on hotel TVs when I'm bored and happen to stumble across one. The two kinds of things to watch in a hotel room are soap operas and documentaries.
When I first heard about soap operas, because I've been to an opera before, I literally thought that they were singing while washing themselves.
Detergents.
While they were washing themselves.
Singing from the book death.
Oh my god.
We're actually about out of time for today, but it's been really nice.
No!
We can talk more if you want after we wrap up the show. But
we can.
We hope everyone out there listening is doing well, being safe, keeping healthy, and keeping themselves sane while staying indoors a lot. Maybe get some fresh air if you can do so in a safe manner. But we hope everyone has lots of great books to read. And if not, we have some online resources on our library website, HudsonAreaLibrary.org. You can borrow ebooks and e-audio. You could check out stories.audible.com for some free kids-geared books. We'll be back next week to talk about some more.
Yay!
Have a good week and happy listening. And happy reading.
Bye.
See you.
कहता कुछ और करता है और लेता है क्यों तू दिल पे जोर बदला बदला कोरी सी रात को भर दे आज तू खोल दे सब राज राज बह जा बह जा गुपचुप सा क्यों है तू ये बता कुछ तो हंसी को दे जगा बेवजह बेवजह खोए खोए बेपरवाह बातों बातों में सुबह लम्हों को ले सजा नहीं है तू तन्हा चलो मैं वहां जहां तू चला जाके देखते हैं दिन दोपहरे सेकते हैं चल बने नई कहानियां बेरादा सड़कों पे तारीखों को ढकेलते हैं चल वहां जाना हो गया चलूं मैं वहां जहां तू चला
Hello, I'm Dr. Dennis McKenna, joined again today by Dr. Venditti, our hospital system general director. Today in Albany County, there is 166 patients who have tested positive for COVID-19. We talk about that number each day. However, I should point out that we've not been doing as much outpatient testing over the last couple days. And so the number that we're really going to be focusing on a going forward basis is the number of inpatients in the hospital. And we talk about that each day. Right now, inside Albany Medical Center, we have 12 patients positive for COVID-19. There are 11 adults and there's one child. And that's good news because yesterday we had two children. So one of them has been discharged. In addition to that, we are tracking the patients under investigation and we currently have 10 for that as well. Today we're wearing shirts representing our cardiovascular service. Mm-hmm. And we know that that's a population that often can be affected by COVID-19. And we're working with those doctors and those nurses to make sure they have protocols in place to be sure that they're ready to care for any patients that come in with COVID-19.
So, Dennis, I think that we have a patient that came in last night in labor and delivery. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's correct. So this is a new population that we are serving. Just like yesterday, we reported for the first time a pediatric patient. Today, we're reporting we had a mother who came in who was laboring. Again, the good news is we have a world-class OBGYN department, fantastic doctors and nurses, and they took great care of that patient. And they're also looking at the literature and developing protocols. And I think you gave them by this afternoon to come up with a plan on how to do this on a going forward basis.
That's right. We should hear what the plan is, how they will handle people in labor, women in labor, their children after they're born, and their significant other who will be in the labor and delivery area with them. So we'll hear about that at 4.
So all of them part of the care delivery, the mother, the child, and the significant other.
Yep, all of them.
Great. Okay. We do have an adequate number of ICU beds, floor beds, staff to take care of everybody. We often ask Fred to update us on PPE. I know some of you have heard us use that term, but maybe you're new to the video. So Fred, what is PPE?
PPE stands for personal protective equipment. It's masks, gloves, gowns, etc. that people wear when they're providing care for patients who potentially have or do have COVID-19. Again, Dennis, we are adequately stocked with all of the things that we need, all of those PPE or protective personal equipment items. We're doing great with that.
Great. One of the things that people ask is, yes, you're protecting your staff when you wear that equipment, but what about the room that I go into? What's my assurance that the room that I'm in is something that's clean? And so, Fred, can you speak a little bit about our environmental services team and how they clean the rooms?
So the environmental services team, or the EVS folks, first of all, do a great job keeping the hospital clean. They have very specific protocols of how they clean rooms when a patient who's been on contact precautions and droplet precautions has been in that room. So wiping down surfaces with certain agents, etc. There's a well-known, well-established protocol, which also applies to the COVID-19 population of patients. In addition, as you've heard, we have had some of our employees test positive. Their spaces get cleaned in the same way when they've been tested positive.
So people should be reassured if they're coming into Albany Med and they're going into a room, that room has been thoroughly cleaned and is safe for anybody to go into that room.
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely
great.
The case.
Can you update us a little bit on work from home? I know we're reporting numbers out each day, and I promised by the end of the week I'd report out the number. But how is it being received by the workforce?
It's being received, I think, absolutely superbly. We, I think, are now well over 500 people working from home. And I want to actually read an email that was sent to Dennis and I, which touches upon that, but also, I think, touches upon a few other things. So, dear Drs. McKenna and Venditti, thank you for remaining ever vigilant on the front line of this corona pandemic, an increasingly unfriendly trial. This crisis has called everyone to attention. We all have a duty to act responsibly and cautiously, and AMC's response has been remarkable. The daily video updates, plug for us, are keeping us all glued together. Recently, I was given approval to work from home 3 days per week. Knowing this is a privilege not afforded to every member of the workforce, I am extremely grateful for the opportunity. While recognizing this good fortune and my good fortune for working at AMC, I must also call attention to the phenomenal team of people I work with and to whom I directly report, who thought it not robbery to recommend and support my ability to work from home. So this is, I think, just a testament to many things, not only work from home, but I think the phenomenal things that are going on in the medical center in general.
That's great. I'm glad that she shared that with us. One final question. We're going to focus more on the inpatient numbers as we go forward. And we've seen that number is going up. You talked about a five-tiered approach. Can you remind us where we are in our tier as far as our ability to care for patients that are coming in?
So there is a five-tier approach. We're still in tier one. Okay. So we have a number of patients in the hospital, but the census of the other kinds of patients, the non-COVID patients, remains under control. So we're still well-positioned to handle any surge of patients.
Great. Thank you. Okay. So for those of you who are working from home, for those of you who are here at Albany Med, including those at the bedside caring for all of our patients, we thank you. We ask you to take care of yourself, take care of each other, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Today, I'm joined by Matt Taparowski, an attorney with the Wagner Firm, and he is also running for Albany District Attorney. Matt, thank you for joining us today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, Matt, could you just briefly tell us why you decided to launch this campaign?
This is a thought I had, you know, over about a year ago. I was called by a judge in Albany City Court to represent a young man named Kaleem Lewis. He had been charged with possessing a gun after the police busted into his family's house at night. They searched all over for a while, and then they found a gun on the other side of a room in a woman's clothing bag under a pile of dirty laundry, and he was on the other side of the room sleeping. So they charged him with it. It wasn't his gun, and so he went to trial on that case. I was working hard to make sure he got a fair trial. And so I gave him my suit, one of my suits, a tie, a shirt, shoes, so he looked his best for this jury. I knew how important it was for him to get a fair trial. And I was picking the jury, and pretty quickly it was an uphill battle to get a diverse jury that reflected our community, a jury of Kaleem's peers, because the black and brown people on the jury quickly raised their hands. They couldn't sit. They couldn't be fair. They had bad experiences with the police and the DA's office there. We were down to two black jurors, a man and a woman. They said they could be fair, and I knew it was important to keep them on this jury. But the prosecutor at the time, she challenged them and kicked them off the jury. I raised a challenge. I said it was a discriminatory excusal of these jurors. He wouldn't get a fair trial. He didn't have a jury of his peers. But the judge didn't agree with me. And at that moment, I turned, I walked back to the table, Kaleem sitting there, and he's just slumped over in the chair. And just all hope is drained from his face, because he knew he wouldn't get a fair trial at that time. He didn't have a jury of his peers. And at that moment, I saw the effects of the unfairness, the physical manifestations of the unfairness in our system. He was ultimately convicted and sentenced to 10 years. And so that story is not unique. These situations in the criminal justice system, these biases, this desire to win by the prosecutor's office to seek convictions and not truth, to kick people off the jury that said they could be fair, and so we could have had a fair jury. This is what drove me to run, because the DA's office is the number one position that ensures fairness in the system. And when they lose track of that fairness, that due process, that fair process, the results mean nothing. And when you're seeking just convictions and incarceration rates, I think the priorities are all skewed. And so I saw that as a defense attorney. I saw that when I was a prosecutor in that office, and it still remained when I had cases there. And so I decided to run. I decided to run to bring more fairness to this system.
Thanks, Matt, for sharing that. As we've been covering on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, the new bail reform laws went into effect in January 2020. Since then, and even before then, many DAs have been pushing for changes to this new bail reform. The New York State budget is due April 1st, and Governor Cuomo has hinted that if there are going to be any amendments to this, it would happen at this time. You have come out in support of the state's new bail reform laws. Can you just explain a little bit about your position?
I'm in full support of the new reforms. I think they're long overdue, much needed. It's a historic leap forward for New York State. Going back and rolling back these important reforms, I think will bring us back to an unfair system, a system where we really had two systems of justice. You have one for wealthy people, predominantly white, and you have another system for working class people, black and brown people, everybody else. Money shouldn't be the determinant factor for you to receive fair justice. And so prior to these reforms, people who didn't have $400 cash, $300 cash, they're held pre-trial when they're legally innocent because they can't afford to be free. And people who had money are walking out the same day that they're arraigned in court. And so these reforms have made the system more fair, have ended these two unequal systems of justice. And so I'm fully in support of them.
Can you just go a little bit further into that and explain the similarities and differences around where you and your opponent stand in terms of bail reform, criminal justice in general?
David Soares was head of the District Attorneys Association prior to these reforms, and that association opposed these reforms. They specifically strongly advised including any changes to the bail system, and that these reforms, the other reforms to discovery and speedy trial, went too far. And so he specifically opposed these reforms before they were passed. And since they were passed, he's engaged in fear-mongering about them, has said they made us less safe, and has not acknowledged the fact that we had these two unequal systems of justice and that these reforms have made things more equal for everybody. And so it's a complete diametric opposition to where I stand in full support of the reforms, that this was real progress, they need to be supported, and we should educate the public and address their concerns of voters on how they make the system more fair. There's still many measures pre-trial to ensure that someone is going to return to court. Less restrictive measures, reporting to probation, some monitoring measures. There's still measures if there need to be measures. But the reality of the situation is that people are returning to court. It's just that that doesn't make a headline. You know, it's not that exciting. People are returning to court, but that's the reality of the situation. My opponent, Soares, has literally highlighted these cases, these few cases where someone is released pre-trial on a nonviolent felony, and has pointed to it as making the public less safe. And that's really unfortunate, because the majority of people that are now released pre-trial were charged with simple misdemeanors, petty crimes by definition. Albany County Jail used to have 60% of the population there held pre-trial on misdemeanors, petty crimes. And that should be highlighted. That's what should be highlighted, that people are being released, that they're returning. This is a great step forward for our justice system.
Now, obviously, we're in the midst of a pandemic, and the topic around bail reform and what to do in prisons right now is being discussed, including a joint statement from elected prosecutors on COVID-19 and addressing the rights and needs of those in custody, a document that was signed by your opponent and just came out a few weeks ago. What's your reaction to him signing this or the contents of this document?
My reaction to it is it's too little too late. It shouldn't have taken a worldwide pandemic to then sign a letter to promote policies that should have been in place, you know, a year ago or years ago. The fact that we are now acknowledging that we have a too large jail population that has people held on nonviolent crimes because they can't pay to be free, or that we have older people in jail that are more susceptible to illnesses or medically at-risk people. I mean, these situations all existed before the coronavirus outbreak. And so if we had proactive, progressive leadership prior to this to address these issues, we could have avoided them in the first place. It shouldn't have taken a worldwide pandemic. And imagine this. Imagine if these historic reforms weren't passed in this last year's budget. Imagine how many more people would have been in this life or death situation in jails across the country, because the vast majority were held pre-trial on bail. And so this pandemic, it highlights the importance of these reforms. It highlights the fact that there's these cracks in the system that have just been widened, and more people now are susceptible to this pandemic.
We know that coronavirus has already in prisons, in jails here in New York State. I also read that in New York City that jails and prisons have already begun to release some prisoners, especially those in for short-term sentences. conflicting to that, I saw that the Department of Justice has asked Congress for the ability to detain arrested people indefinitely. As an attorney, how do you make sense of these regressive versus progressive proposals and actions, and what should be happening in this state of emergency?
The explanation there is two different administrations. One, Trump-led Republican, you know, law and order, more regressive administration versus, you know, the state of New York, which has done a good job of being progressive and I think needs to stay that way with this upcoming budget, keep the bail reforms in place and not roll back on these historic reforms.
Matt Toporowski, in this time of pandemic, in this time of coronavirus, what has your office been doing to show up for the community?
Yeah, so we've really